This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by the KTTH smartphone app. If you don't have it, text the keyword app to 1-800-465-8770. I'll send you a link so you can download the app on your Android or iPhone. Text APP to 1-800-465-8770. A lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
Another impeachment hearing, another rehashing of second and third hand accounts that we're pretending is good enough to establish a crime and an impeachable offense when it does neither. It doesn't establish a crime because a crime didn't actually occur. If it did, they have zero evidence for it. They have zero evidence for it whatsoever. And it's certainly what they're alleging happened does not even come close to qualifying for an impeachable offense. Now, if we want to pretend that it does, oh boy. Look at the presidency in the future. Regardless of whether or not a Democrat or Republican or, God forbid, a socialist is in office, it's going to be completely abused. The Democrats hate Donald Trump so much that they're willing to go down this path, and every single person out there, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, should be concerned and should be fighting back. The fact of the matter is they do not have the evidence they need to impeach. They'll still impeach in the House. It's going to go nowhere in the Senate. So we're still going to have President Trump in office, and they know that. They're doing it anyway, despite years and years, decades of comments suggesting that they would only do something like this if there was bipartisan support. They're doing it anyway because they want to put a stain on this man's presidency. And they will happily lie along the way. Here's Jerry Nadler, the Democrat from New York.
Let me be clear. Every fact alleged by the whistleblower has been substantiated by multiple witnesses.
The whistleblower did not establish any facts. The whistleblower heard something through someone else. The whistleblower was not providing any firsthand account of anything he or she witnessed, but what have other people heard about something that allegedly took place?
Again and again, each of whom has been questioned extensively by Democrats and Republicans alike. The allegations also match up with the president's own words, as released by the White House, words that he still says were perfect.
Here's the funny thing. Jerry Nadler wants you to believe that the president and his team not just broke the law, but willingly put out all the evidence that they broke the law. That's what they actually want you to believe.
I also expect to hear complaints about the term quid pro quo, as if a person needs to verbally acknowledge the name of a crime while he is committing it for it to be a crime at all.
That's a fair point, except you literally don't have a quid pro quo. The actual people who have firsthand knowledge of exactly what went down, the president of this country and the president of Ukraine, both say that's not what happened. There's no victim here. There's literally no victim here. The money wasn't withheld for more than a little bit of a time that the guy in Ukraine didn't even know was being withheld. The president did not get an investigation in order to withhold the information. The only quid pro quo we have, and we played the audio in the last hour, is the vice president, Joe Biden, at the time when he was in charge of looking into corruption in the Ukraine, withheld $1 billion until Ukraine fired a corrupt prosecutor. That's quid pro quo, but that kind, I guess, is okay.
The record on this point is also clear. Multiple officials testified that the president's demand for an investigation into his rivals was a part of his personal political agenda and not related to the foreign policy objectives of the United States.
Oh, really? Okay. What's kind of interesting about that, and you hear it again there, right? You heard it, right? He talks about how going after looking into a political rival, which implies that if the president looked into someone who wasn't a political rival, if the president looked into or asked for an investigation, even if it was in an 8-sentence sort of fuzzy claim of someone in his own party, that would be okay. So if Donald Trump, as president, made a phone call, instead of saying looking into Joe Biden and his son, said we're going to look into, say, Matt Gaetz or Doug Collins, two Republicans, that would be okay. So the only thing that's preventing a president from getting involved and going after corruption is so long as the person he's going after isn't personally running for president against him. Is that the okay, fine. But then doesn't that also imply that right now Joe Biden can be incredibly corrupt and it doesn't matter? I know we want to pretend. We want to pretend that before giving money to a foreign country, we don't have to worry about any corruption in that country. Okay, fine. Got it. What say you, Doug Collins?
What is very detrimental to me, though, is this. This committee is not hearing from a factual witness. This committee is not doing anything past hearing from law school professors and staff. We've not been given, the chairman said something about the president not being able to come. Show me where he would actually have a proper process in this that's not talking to staff and not talking to law school professors. When we could actually have witnesses that will be called by both sides.
The reason why when people actually listen to what's going on and watch what's going on, they're siding with the Republicans and or at least not taking a position that's pro-impeachment is that clip right there. Doug Collins is not reading from a script that was created for him by a staff member. Jerry Nadler is. Everything that comes out of the Democrats' mouths have been scripted by somebody else, have been coordinated with others on that committee and the people that are testifying, and have been focus grouped. They went in front of a focus group and they decided what they thought needed to be said in order to get people out there who have not yet made up their mind to go ahead and side with them. But it's not working because it's not authentic. It's not working because the visuals of it is Jerry Nadler literally reading off of a script without any passion at all. And then you have Doug Collins and every single one of those Republicans on that committee who are speaking passionately and off script. It's why someone like Ross Garber, a CNN legal analyst, saying right now there's a lack of support for impeachment.
I do think, though, that they missed an opportunity to do that in a way that's compelling for the public. Maybe public opinion is baked in. But that's a big problem if that's true for the Democrats, because so far, you know, there's not overwhelming support.
There's not overwhelming support for impeachment. And yet the Democrats, by their own standards, the standards that they set in the 90s when Clinton was being impeached, they said there should never, ever, ever, ever be an impeachment that doesn't have the overwhelming support of the American people and doesn't have bipartisan support. They have neither here. They're moving forward anyway. Ask yourself why they're choosing to ignore the rules that they set for themselves. It's because they're driven by hate. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
So apparently Seattle is one of America's best college cities, according to a ridiculous blog called Wallet Hub, which does useless surveys that they release every single day to people like us on the radio because they want us to say the name of their website multiple times.
And they got you to do that.
They did it once. And I'm only pointing this out because it shows you, number one, how ridiculous they are. But number two, it kind of smacks in the face the claim of millennials complaining about Seattle being so expensive. Because one would argue they looked at, in this case, they looked at 31 key indicators of academic, social, and economic growth potential in these rankings. Seattle comes out at number 6 overall, came in number 3 among large cities. Now, this is according to Como TV. Seattle was tied for first place in nightlife options per capita and was among the top 10 cities for social environment. So places where you can be, quote unquote, social, meet other people, talk with other people. Seattle also ranked well above average in several other key categories, including quality of higher education, city accessibility, and lowest brain drain. The city, however, got its lowest marks for wallet friendliness, meaning it's really expensive. So here's a question I have for everybody. If college students really appreciate the social aspects of going out to to clubs and bars and coffee shops and meeting people that way, and that's a huge bit of importance, but they can't afford to do it, does it really make it for a great college city?
Yeah, I want to know where Ellensburg was on this list, because
right?
We have all of those. We have one coffee shop in the town. We have two bars. Come on, talk about social life.
And it's at least affordable there.
And that's the best part. It all is affordable.
But we always assume because there's a lot of something that makes it good. There can be a lot of things that you can't afford to do, and if you can't afford to actually do them, then what good are they to you as a college student?
I still can't afford to, you know, go and do the things in Seattle. It's because I volunteer here.
You know, we pay you. Oh, we don't get paid enough. Oh, $250,000 a year is not enough to live here. I'm sorry if you're not happy with that. Most people would kill for that paycheck.
It's not enough.
I want more money. You don't even live in Seattle.
I make like, you know.
You live in Newcastle.
I make 1% of Jason.
Okay, well, when you're the talent, you can get paid what I get paid. How about that?
Doesn't take much doesn't take much talent over there, does it?
Okay, that was a good one. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation. 1-800-465-8770 for your text messages. Hey, Denny Heck is taking some time to talk with Fox News despite him retiring at the end of his term because his soul hurts or something. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? The sports ball.
Well, that didn't go as planned. Seahawks yesterday, a very significant defeat to the LA Rams in LA, 28-12. To help us explain exactly what happened, to do the post-mortem, joining me in studio, Bob Stelton from our sister station, 710 ESPN Seattle. Now, I believe I counted you as one of the people who said the Seahawks were going to win. Everyone seemed to think it was going to be a close game. It wasn't close at all.
No, it was a collective fail. I don't have any answers for you, Jason. I don't know what to say about that. It was a pig of a game.
Yeah.
They stunk in every capacity. Anything they did positive was negated by something negative. So
immediately after the positive,
too. Yeah, I mean, listen, it was a really nice cornucopia of fail is what they did. The offensive line was atrocious. The defensive line was atrocious. The secondary was bad. Russell Wilson wasn't particularly great. Yet, I'd identify three players from the Seahawks that I could pull aside and say, you know what, good game.
DK Metcalf,
6 targets, 6 catches, really good catches, a couple of them. But he did let Jalen Ramsey sucker him into that penalty. Outside of that, he'd be one. Quandre Diggs, great game. And then Chris Carson, before they had to bail on the run because they were so far behind, was really effective. Had some nice runs. He only had 15 carries, but he had 76 yards, averaging over 5 yards per carry. Outside of those three, you either had no impact or you had a bad day. It was just, and that includes Pete Carroll. That includes Russell Wilson. That includes everybody. It was the worst game they played under Pete Carroll in 2 seasons.
Yeah, and Russell Wilson had an uncharacteristically bad game.
He was,
and I don't know if it was horrible. Because it was the people around. I'm not saying he's horrible. I'm saying
it was an okay game. He wasn't horrible, but he wasn't great by any stretch.
He wasn't helped by some of the
two crucial plays.
The Hollister.
A fourth down pass to Malik Turner that hit him right in the freaking hands.
Yeah.
And the defender did not touch the ball. So he needs to catch that. He didn't catch it. Hollister, the other one, on a third down. Mm-hmm. Both crucial plays to keep drives going. Hit right in the hands. They dropped the ball. So it was a game where he didn't get help in those instances from guys who have helped in the past. And he wasn't able to pull off any of his magic. He got sacked 5 times. He was under pressure the entire game. It was a bad day for the offensive line. So, yeah,
well, happened exactly with the offensive
they
line?
They got beat. They got beat. They got manhandled. They got tossed around. They were out-schemed. The coaches were out-schemed. Everything the Rams seemed to do on both sides of the ball seemed to work. The coaches were out-coached. The players were out-played.
So help me figure out then, was this the Seahawks having a bad game, or is it that they were just not the better team, or both?
It was them having a bad game. It was the worst game they played this year by far. I would argue it's the worst game they played in 2 seasons under Pete Carroll. It was a collective fail. I mean, they are a decidedly better team than what they showed last night, and they made the Rams a 7-5 team who has talent. There are a lot of individuals we could point to and go, man, that is a stud player. That's a stud player. But they hadn't been playing well.
They plateaued.
Well, they beat Arizona, and everybody went, oh, man, did you see what they did to Arizona? Arizona's got the worst defense in the entire NFL. They're not a good team. So, but what the Seahawks did is allowed them to continue that momentum from the Arizona game. I mean, I'm not sure what their plan was defensively, but it was horrible because you had guys –
it really was
wide open.
I didn't understand it either, and I'm saying that as someone who, again, I'm a casual fan of the NFL, so I'm not studying anything. I weirdly watched a lot of football yesterday because the games were on and I was bored, and even I was like, that just doesn't make any sense.
No, it was horrible. I don't know what the plan was. They were killing the linebackers in coverage. When the linebackers, they had 3 linebackers out there. Michael Kendricks was out. That certainly didn't help. So you had a rookie, Cody Barton, in his spot. But they went after all 3 of them. And you could point to plays where all 3 of them missed or made poor decisions. And it was just, Shaquille Griffin, had a bad game. He's been playing really well this year. And again, even Hollister, a guy who was a kind of a cast off, they brought him over from New
England. Going in, there was a lot of momentum on his side. A lot
of people
talking about him on the Q13 pregame show.
For good reason.
Yeah.
For good reason. That's not unfounded. There's a reason for it, because he has been an aberration. He turned into a security blanket for Russell Wilson. So for him to drop that ball, you're like, what is going on? And Malik Turner, who is not a primary target, who's a guy who's a bit of a, you know, a fringe player, if you will, but anytime they've really put him in there and given him an opportunity, he's come away with something positive. He drops the ball. I mean, it was just sort of a collective fail. Is the best way I can describe it.
Did they choke knowing that they kind of they didn't have to win it, but they kind of had to win it?
No, the Rams had to win it.
Yeah, but so did the Seahawks, taking advantage of, we talked about this last week, of getting into that spot, going into the playoffs. A win would have sort of cemented that position.
Well, if they would have won, they'd be the number one seed in the NFC right now.
Yeah.
They'd be atop the NFC West because they have the head-to-head tiebreaker with the 49ers, and the Saints lost. So the Seahawks would have been the number one seed in the NFC right now had they won. So the idea, people were talking before this game, oh, this feels like a trap game. A trap game, which I don't believe in anyway, and we've talked to players and they're like, no. But the idea of a trap game is you looking past the team that's in front of you because you feel like, we don't need to worry about these guys. Let's worry about the 49ers at the end of the season. A trap game would make sense if they lost to Carolina, a team that's lost, I think, five or six. They're bad. They fired their coach, their quarterback's out. I mean, there's a reason to look at them and go, okay, if we show up, we beat them. That's a trap game. Not a division rival, not a team in the Rams who was in the Super Bowl last year, not a team that you beat by them missing a field goal on your home field, and a team that gives you problems every year, regardless of how good or bad they are. So the idea that the Rams were a team that the Seahawks are overlooking or they were a trap game is nonsense. That is not why they lost.
So I seem to remember sending you a text message wanting the Saints to win.
Right.
Had they won, wouldn't we be in a better position than we are today?
For this particular moment, but
just throwing that out there.
That's fine.
Just throwing that out there. You shamed me on text message.
No,
we don't want them to win.
No, if they'd won the game the way most people picked them to do and expected them to do, they're the number one seed in the NFL.
People should maybe pay attention to some of my analysis.
Right.
On it, top-notch.
I've got to tell you,
season.
You weren't alone in that. We were having these debates during the week.
Yeah, who do you root for? Win? Yeah,
everybody's like, do I root for the 49ers or the Saints? You make a case for both. You know, you can if you wanted the 49ers to win, then you know, congratulations.
I tend to generally take the position of I always want someone in the same division to lose. I totally understand the argument behind the Saints.
Yeah,
it just means
because you were counting on the Seahawks to handle their business,
which is not just. Just generally, you want to make it as easy as possible to get into that number one spot, and what's not easy is wanting the other team to win.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind
of both arguments made sense. So
okay.
There's not a right or wrong in that argument.
Where do we go from here? What are the implications now, playoff time? Which, by the way, I also said, I don't like
this
idea of selling tickets to playoff games before they've actually secured a position, which is the most ridiculous issue ever. I get why all the other teams are doing it.
Why does it bother you if they don't go to the playoffs? People get their money back.
No, I know, but you're just like tempting fate. You're tempting an upset.
No, it's gone on for decades.
Yeah, and it's
in every sport.
For decades. You guys have been dumb for decades. Okay, but now where do they stand?
Every sport, even your MLS teams do it.
That's not true.
Come on.
That is 100% incorrect. They do not sell tickets before the team, before the playoffs have actually been set.
Well, in the real sports they do, but okay. Anyway.
Okay, where are they right now? Where do they stand? We have a minute left.
They're the fifth seed right now. If they handle their business, which means you beat the two teams before the 49ers that you absolutely should beat. They're both dreadful. You put yourself in a position with a win against the 49ers. You win the NFC West. And depending on what happens with the Saints and the Packers, we'll see. You could still be the number one seed, maybe number two seed.
I mean, you're going up against the Panthers and the Cardinals. You've got no
excuse to lose to either team.
Who do the 49ers have aside from Seahawks?
I'd have to go back and look at their schedule. I can't remember who they've got lined up.
Well, that's because
the Seahawks
you're not
need
very
to worry
good
about,
at what you do, but
they need to worry
I
about their
prepared
business.
Prepared
yeah, what's your computer
Falcons?
In front of you say?
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't have access to a computer. They're playing the Falcons and the Rams.
Okay. Falcons, they should
and so,
absolutely
I mean, in
handle.
In theory, we have a better, Seahawks have a better schedule going into that final game.
Yeah.
Rams could
beat them. Yeah. Falcons are not a good team. They should beat the Falcons. You expect that they could have a tough matchup with the Rams.
Maybe next week they'll have the game that the Seahawks just had against the Rams.
That would be fun.
Against the
I would enjoy it.
fingers crossed. We'll have you back on at the end of the week to preview that matchup. Thanks for stopping by, Bob Selton.
You got it, man.
You're listening to the Jason Rancho.
Kent, Olympia, Everett, Sammamish.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rance Show.
Sumner, Woodinville, Des Moines.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at the time. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local, brought to you by Sean Keller and Smiles by Design. The concept of the Big Local is very simple. The media is hyper-focused on the city of Seattle. They end up ignoring a lot of stories that are happening everywhere else because they don't hang out in Auburn. They don't cover the Kennewick beat. They're all about Seattle. And so we decide during this segment to completely ignore Seattle and spend our time exclusively on the communities you live in and care about most. And we start in Auburn, where Riverside High School teacher and a coach has been suspended pending an investigation by the school district after a YouTube video surfaced of him being confronted for allegedly trying to meet up with a 14-year-old boy he met on the app Grindr for sexual purposes. Auburn School District spokesperson Vicky Alonzo told Cairo 7 TV that she wants people to come forward if they've experienced anything with this particular teacher.
If there are any things in the past, we would hope that people would come forward. We don't have any indicators of that right now.
So this video was apparently taped at a Walmart in Texas by a YouTube channel called Predator Poachers. They go behind the scenes and pretend to be underage individuals. They connect with men who are interested in sex. And then when they agree to meet up, they show up as adults, bringing their cameras along. Now, they did this with this guy back in July, and we're not entirely sure why, but all of a sudden, someone got a hold of it, I'm assuming some student, and then it started to spread.
Yeah, the story goes, a former Auburn Riverside student saw it, recognized the teacher, put it on social media,
contact. Just by randomly just yeah, found this just person,
was
this
watching
video.
The YouTube channel.
What were they looking for?
It's a YouTube channel, it's a... Poaching predators?
Predator poachers.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a channel. You go and you watch it.
It just seems like a random thing to just find.
They get hundreds of thousands of views.
Okay, fair enough. I've never heard of this, so they watched the video, and it's posted online. None of the outlets are identifying the teacher because there haven't been any charges against him. Okay, but here's just a short clip of him being confronted by these two dudes at a Walmart.
Oh, shit. You're 14-year-old kids, are you?
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about your name, Jim, and you have like a little boy named Jackson, though. Everyone's trying to tell you.
Jimmy.
Hey, look, you don't got that big of a head like that boy Jimmy Neutron. You the dumb Jim, Bo, because I caught you, Bo. That's what makes you dumb, Bo.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Bo, you in the
Where's
kid,
the picture?
Bo?
Huh? The picture.
The picture.
So the Auburn Police Department said they're aware of the video, but Houston police would be the lead on the investigation since all of this happened in Texas. It's an incredibly awkward and very difficult to watch video, mostly because even though there's no police have gotten involved to this point, saying this is what this individual was doing is still all alleged. He hasn't been charged. You kind of look at it, and at least my take was, of course he's guilty. Now, maybe that's unfair. I don't particularly like these types of vigilante setups, because in a lot of these cases, they probably made it even harder now for cops to actually make an arrest. They showed some screenshots of the conversations they had with this guy, and I couldn't tell if they reached out to him, allegedly, or the other way around. Not that it matters, but when you're a cop, you're trained to do all of this the right way. I look at this and I say, man, if I was innocent of this and some random dudes came up to me and started to yell at me in a Walmart, I'm yelling back. I'm not sort of putting my head down and wandering out because it's awkward. I'm going to be fighting back and say, the hell are you talking about? Of course that's not. What are you talking? That did not happen with this guy.
Not at all. This guy kind of just took his lumps and tried walking away from the situation. And I can't believe it took since July to figure this thing out.
And that's the thing. So this happened to him, again, regardless of whether or not this is true, for the sake of not getting sued, it's all alleged. Okay. This happens back in July. Imagine this guy's thinking. Because I can imagine the first week or so, he's wondering, oh my God, what are they going to do with this video? What's going to happen? My life is over. Then maybe a month goes by and he doesn't realize anything had happened. And maybe 2 months goes by, it's still in the back of his head, but he's wondering, okay, when is that shoe going to drop? When is this video going to be released? Because I'm presuming that he doesn't know who the poacher predators are, like he's never actually heard of them. And then, again, from July, all of a sudden, over the weekend, the story breaks. I wonder if he thought he was going to get away with it.
Yeah, I don't know. And I feel he had to have thought he was getting away with it.
The only good news in all of this, and we put that in air quotes, is that there's no victim here that we know of.
Yeah, not
so,
yet.
So obviously, in this case, it was a fictitious 14-year-old. If he did this, we don't want him around any student, period, ever. But we don't know of any victim yet, and I'm hoping there is none.
He was also the boys' water polo coach, which I find extremely frightening.
Yes! If this happened, I hope this guy goes to jail. Although, again, I don't know what the crime is in Houston, like what the laws are as it relates to not an actual conversation with a kid. And I know that generally doesn't matter, but I also don't, I don't know the laws specifically in Texas. But I'm glad we know about it. I'm glad he's on suspension. My assumption is he's going to be let go rather quickly. And if this was, in fact, him, I don't know how you, unless you've got some weird rules within the teachers union, I don't know how you keep this guy a teacher or on the payroll. What he should do is just right now resign and deal with the consequences legally as they come forward. He should do the right thing and not... unless this was this big scam in which he had nothing whatsoever to do with it, then go ahead and fight back tooth and nail. But he knows whether or not he did this conduct. Here's a former student of his, Jessica Perez, talking with Cairo 7.
I honestly didn't really believe it was him at first. I had to pause the video several times and kind of like take a moment to process, oh my God, that's actually Mr. He always came off as a very professional, very stern man. So to find out that he's attracted to younger children is just a shock.
Did you go to this school?
No, this is the one that was like 5 minutes down the road.
Okay, do you know people who go to that school?
Many.
What are they saying?
Not good things. Okay. They say that this guy was kind of creepy at times, and, you know, it's...
Now, to be fair, I suppose I would say, I'd preface that by saying, after you're told something creepy about someone, maybe you start to see things. But also, to be fair, sometimes people really are creepy for legitimately creepy reasons.
Yeah, so we'll see how this breaks as more and more, I think, former students and current students will start talking about it.
I'm just praying there's not an actual victim.
Yeah, I hope not.
Not that that matters in the sense of him. He should not be in front of any student, especially water polo kids who are half naked in a pool. Yeah, it's a disturbing story.
It gets worse, you know, when you go from teacher to water polo coach.
It does because there's a locker room involved.
Yeah, and it's bad.
It's bad already, but then, yes, it can get worse. Meanwhile, let's go to Kennewick, where a man is making his Travel Channel debut as the series Expedition Bigfoot will get its first episode this Sunday. The man's name is Russell Accord. Imagine being proud of this.
We're going to do a show called Expedition Bigfoot starting December 8th.
Yeah.
And it's an 8-episode series of exactly what we do in the woods when we actually do legitimate research. It shows our means and methods. There's a team of 4 of us that go into Central Oregon and we research. It's something you won't want to miss. Starting December 8th, Sunday night, on Travel Channel.
So it aired last night. You know, good for him for pitching it. In fact, I did miss it last night. I was watching the Seahawks game. I don't understand the fascination with Bigfoot.
What?
At all. Because
what?
Something tells me that if Bigfoot existed, you probably would have found it by now.
Probably, but...
Now, the whole aliens thing, a little bit different because you have an infinite amount of space, right? You can always make the argument that space is this wild frontier. We will never fully be able to explore all of it. Of course, it's possible someplace down, light years. Okay, fine. There's only so much space for Bigfoot.
Yeah, but we don't comb this entire region.
Yes, you do.
No, we don't.
Yes,
you know
how
much mountains have been like untouched in Washington and Oregon?
This is literally what these people do.
This is just
and
up and down in the Cascades, hanging
they
out.
They found nothing.
Yeah, because they
you
are.
You want to know why they won't find
anything?
They're
a limited species, and there's only about 2 of them left.
It doesn't exist.
How dare you?
It doesn't exist.
How dare you?
You don't believe in that. Stop.
How dare you?
So dumb.
You're just turning people away from this guy's show. You should be wanting to represent Washington
this
way.
No, I don't want him to represent Washington. We got enough crazy. We are filled with crazy in Seattle. On the political sphere, I don't need a Kennewick dude being put out there as the face of Washington State.
Maybe this can take away from the political crazy. People will be like, oh man, I forgot they had the Bigfoot thing.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. Not going to happen. The closest we have to Bigfoot is Jay Inslee, because he kind of sounds like what I picture Bigfoot would sound like if he spoke English.
You think Jay Inslee is Bigfoot?
Yeah, I mean, you throw a big moppy hair on him, Jay Inslee would kind of look like, because he's a big oaf already. I don't mean that insultingly.
That's what you say to somebody when you want to insult them is, wow, you look like Bigfoot.
Well, I mean, he would look like Bigfoot if he was covered in hair.
Look, if I posted on my social media right now, it's like, wow, Bigfoot's hosting a radio show and it was a picture of you on the other side of this glass.
I have big feet.
Would get mad at me and be like, hey,
I would be
what
like,
are you
correct.
Doing?
Size 13, baby. Jay Inslee just kind of comes off as a big oaf.
I think there's more Bigfoot-looking people out there.
1-800-465-8770. Please send us any photos of Bigfoot as you've been able to capture them in the wild. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show, live in the Online Trading Academy on this Monday afternoon. Did you know that Senator Ted Cruz is a stooge of Putin? I know. I'm told that by the Washington Post. You see, he had the audacity to mention Ukraine meddled in the 2016 election. But when you're a hack media member doing the work for the Democrats, the kind of analysis that you provide is simply, oh, they won't exclusively talk about Russia. They're a Russian asset. We are supposed to believe that anyone who mentioned Ukraine's involvement in the election, it means that they don't think Russia had any involvement in the election. That is, of course, a ridiculous and lazy piece of analysis. Both are true. They're true to different standards. That's true. Russia was deeply involved. Ukraine was a little bit involved, but they both were involved. The media, however, doesn't want to give any credence to the fact that, yes, Ukraine was involved, because, yes, then you would give a motive to the Trump administration in not trusting Ukraine and wanting to withhold funds to their foreign aid packages. Because what president dealing with a corrupt government that tried to keep you from becoming president, why would they want to just give them a whole bunch of money? So Ted Cruz got into it with Chuck Todd on Meet the Press over the weekend.
Let me ask you this. Is it not possible that this president is capable of creating a false narrative about somebody in order to help him politically?
Except that's not what happened. The president released the transcript of the phone call. You can read what was said on the phone call.
Yeah, and the Biden.
Let me point out again.
You yourself thought the Biden part was troubling.
Chuck, let me point out a game that the media is playing. You know,
here
a question that you've asked a number of people is you've said to senators sort of aghast, do you believe that Ukraine and not Russia interfered in the election? Now, that in a court of law would be struck as a misleading question. Of course, Russia interfered in our election. Nobody looking at the evidence disputes that.
On
the evidence, Russia clearly interfered in our election. But here's the game the media is playing. Because Russia interfered, the media pretends nobody else did. Ukraine blatantly interfered in our election. The sitting ambassador from Ukraine wrote an op-ed blasting Donald Trump during the election season.
Do you know why he did that? What did Donald Trump as a candidate say about Ukraine and Crimea during the election that might have inspired the ambassador?
So you're saying they had disagreements with Donald Trump and they wanted Hillary Clinton to get elected.
Okay, so they wrote an op-ed.
Ukrainian parliamentarian.
That is the difference. What you're saying is you're saying a pickpocket, which essentially is a Hill op-ed, compared to Bernie Madoff and Vladimir Putin.
What I love about this, and you can sort of get it from the tone of Chuck Todd's voice, he is defending a Democratic talking point. He wants you to believe that the only thing that came out of the government of Ukraine was one op-ed in the Hill. I'm sorry, but it was much more than that. It was way more than that, according to Kenneth Vogel and David Stern of Politico. This is the story that's gotten a lot of play during the impeachment hearings. The title is called Ukrainian Efforts to Sabotage Trump Backfire. Now, were they only talking about one op-ed in the Hill? No. This is directly from the entire report. Ukrainian government officials tried to help Hillary Clinton and undermine Trump by publicly questioning his fitness for office.
They also disseminated documents implicating a top Trump aide in corruption and suggested they were investigating the matter, only to back away after the election.
Oh, that's kind of weird. It's a little bit more than a pickpocket, isn't it? Oh, there's more? And they helped Clinton's allies research damaging information on Trump and his advisors. Now, that seems like a little bit more than a pickpocket, doesn't it? And doesn't this lay the groundwork for why the Trump administration would be a little bit cautious in anything coming out of Ukraine before giving a whole bunch of money and financial aid to Ukraine? Don't you think that this president, or any president, frankly, who had to deal with this kind of stuff, might question whether or not it's the right move financially for this country? Might want to know whether or not the corrupt aspects of that prior administration before this new president were actually handled? We know that Ukraine is a corrupt country. We knew that already. It's one of the most corrupt countries in the entire world, the last administration. That was before Zelensky. But if you say anything about Ukrainian corruption, people like Chuck Todd put out bad faith arguments claiming, oh, well, see, you're doing what Putin wants you to do. You're ignoring what Putin did. No, we're not. I don't know a single Republican who's actively saying in any meaningful way, outside of some cranks on Twitter, oh, yeah, Russia didn't do anything. What are you talking about? Russia did absolutely nothing. Russia's innocent of all. No one's taking that position. We've heard the exact same thing over and over and over again from Republicans in Congress. Yes, Russia was deeply involved. Also involved was Ukraine. Now, if you want the American people to think that the president had no reason to be concerned with Ukraine and that it was all about a quid pro quo to go after a political rival in Joe Biden, then of course they're going to keep this information from you. Here's a CNN national security analyst, Samantha Vinaigrette.
Anna, Putin hits a home run every time Republicans further this fictional narrative. We have an intelligence community, and guess what? It's not based in Moscow. Our own intel officials have warned lawmakers that Russia is engaged in a campaign to frame Ukraine for 2016 election interference. But Ted Cruz and others are relying on Russia's assessment rather than our own intelligence community. That undercuts our own experts.
That is not true. She is conflating something completely different with what's been out there and established as fact. And by the way, let's just say the Hill op-ed was the only thing that was out there that was them working against the president, because I would acknowledge that that's certainly minor. What she just said there is that none of this happened whatsoever. It's all a Russian talking point. She is out of her mind, ironically using a talking point coming from the Democrats because they want to use all of this to go after President Donald Trump. We're going to have a deep dive conversation into impeachment sham that happened earlier today. When we come back, you are listening to the Jason Rancher. Send me your text messages, 1-800-465-8770. That's 1-800-465-8770. More when we come back on AM 770 KTTH.